brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
To Software Radio. On time, on target. Yeah, you're stuck with me again this week. It's Big Phil Campion from across the pond. And this week, we're going to be taking you on a little adventure. We're going to talk about the second part of selection, which is what I call selection proper. And then I'm going to tell you a few tales from my time on the anti-piracy circuit, knocking about with the pirates down in Somalia. So, let's begin straight away. We finished last time I was on talking about the Hills phase of selection. But remember, that's purely the Hills phase. It's called aptitude, and it's aptitude for a reason, because it's only designed to test that you're good enough to go on selection proper. So, selection proper then, as I call it. What does selection proper consist of? Well, it's the jungle phase. Before you go there, you spend a couple of weeks in Hereford preparing for it. You learn new weapons, you learn a bit of communications, you take some jabs. You do all your bits and pieces you need to do for your preparation to go to the jungle. The jungle is serious. It's proper soldiering. If you can soldier in the jungle, you can soldier absolutely anywhere, is the theory behind this. So, bearing in mind I joined the army to be a soldier, although it is an extremely and incredible hard phase of selection, it's probably also one of the most enjoyable phases. And it really was. And I'm going to tell you now about what actually goes on when you go to the jungle. So, like I said, you spend 2 weeks preparation time in Hereford. By the time you've finished that preparation, you're more than ready and chomping at the bit. Remember, we flew from Bryce Norton, and we flew out to Brunei, where I remember getting off the plane, and straight away, as I got off the plane, the heat absolutely smashed me in the head. It really did. As I came down the steps of the plane in Brunei, the heat took me straight away. You know, that sort of heat where it just knocks the breath out of you. Well, it proper did. It was absolutely incredibly hot. So the first thing we did when we got to Brunei, we travelled out to the camp where we were going to be staying and staging from. And in that camp, you got a basher, you got your bed, you put your mozzie net up, and then you started your first round of briefings. Now, for the first week or so in the jungle, or on the jungle phase of selection, it's spent actually acclimatising. Don't forget, if you can acclimatise when you go into any of these regions where it's hot and different to where you've just come from, it's always worth doing so. And bearing in mind, selection, although it's tough, is a course, it's still worth spending the time to acclimatise, because if you don't acclimatise properly, you're going to pick up heat injuries and people are going to go down really quickly, and you're just going to lose people for the sake of having a bit of acclimatisation time. So how did we spend that acclimatisation? Well, we spent quite a bit of it in the classroom, and we were learning the stuff that we needed to know once we got into the jungle proper. Tactics, navigation. Navigation's huge in the jungle, as we're going to talk about in a bit. We also took the opportunity to do some physical activities in the sunshine and in the heat. Okay, we just do these incredible beach runs where we used to leave camp first thing in the morning for runs down these beaches. And I'm telling you now, it was tough, hard, horrible running. It really was. On sand, and you know what it's like in sand anyway. You know, your feet sink into it. You can't get a proper purchase. You seem to take 2 steps forwards and 5 steps backwards in it. It was absolutely honking. And you can imagine, there must have been still 90-odd blokes left on selection at this stage of the campaign. So we're trying to run down this beach. The DS is screaming at you. You're being yelled at. And all the time, you got to keep going. You can't afford at any stage of selection to just give up, because you'll be got rid of straight away. So no matter what they throw at you, you got to keep going. And I remember the beach runs, and I wasn't a very good runner. So I could go up and down the hills okay with my pack on, because the pack's the leveller. But you had these guys who were like racing snakes. and they could leg it down the beach as quick as I could sprint, and they could keep it up for hours and hours on end. And I think to myself, how am I ever going to stick with this? Well, that's the thing. You do. You just stick with it. You can't be expected to catch these people up because they are just lungs on legs, you know. But you just have to keep going. And I remember one time coming in, and I must have been near the back of the pack. And I wasn't always near the back of the pack when I had a Bergen on, but on this particular occasion, I was at the back of the pack. And I remember the DS hovering about, waiting to see who was going to give up and who wasn't. And I thought, there's no way am I going to give up. So we got in the camp. So that first week, those beach runs, actually did put a couple of guys off and didn't want to go into the jungle proper. Now, the other thing you do on that first week is you have a look at your kit, you pack it properly. I think we looked at river crossings. We did some of the drills you were going to be doing for real, actually on the plains. Because obviously once you get into the jungle, it's a tight environment and it's done so on purpose. But to learn the drills, to learn the contact drills, to learn how to fight forwards, backwards, sideways, to learn how to deal with ambushes and all that sort of stuff, do it in the open first. We did it all in the open first so that we could look around us and say, yeah, he's there, he's here, I need to be here, this is what we do there. You know, it was just such invaluable time spent training. And I remember training in that heat as well with all your gear on. Is extremely intense. So we were acclimatizing all the time. In that first week, first 7 days, we just acclimatized. And like I said, we covered a lot of the points that we needed to cover once we got into the jungle proper. So the jungle proper then, well, we were broken up into patrols, and you stay in those patrols of 4 to 6 men until people start obviously failing, because people do fail. In fact, they start dilapidating the minute you get in there. You know, I remember guys went on the first night. They really did. They just didn't like it. So you're in your patrols and you wait to be helicoptered, choppered into the jungle proper. You have no idea what this. And it was really tense for me because you had no idea what to expect. I'd not done a jungle trip proper. I'd been to Kenya before and I'd been in the trees in Kenya, but it's like being in the woods in Kenya. This is a jungle proper now. This is Brunei. This has got slippery, horrible snakes. It's got massive spiders. Everything wants you dead. It's overgrown, it's secondary, it's primary, there's everything there. Everything you expected to be the jungle to be, it's there in Brunei. So you're waiting to go. And I remember we finally got down, we had all our kit packed, Bergen on, webbing on, all your gear, okay? Some of your gear went in front of you, so it was all had already gone, okay? Because I'll explain the setup when I get in there, but you have like a base camp and you work from the base camp. So it's a massive harbour area. And so you're being flown into this. And I remember it's one of the most impressive things I'd seen in my army career up to date at that point was when we lifted off and we flew low over the treetops out to where we were going to be dropped off. And I remember we were sat on the sides of the chopper looking down and I'm thinking to myself, this is real now. This is proper. This is soldiering. And I was really excited by it. And I knew we was going to be in for an extremely hard time. But I was massively excited by the fact that we were actually now going to be doing some proper soldiering. When you've been on the hills, you're just up and down all day. It's just seeing, like I say, if you're capable of carrying the weights the distance. You don't do anything tactical. You don't raise your weapon. You don't fire your weapon. You just go from A to B. Now we were going to be doing all this stuff proper. We're going to be soldiering with proper soldiers. These guys who were on selection, the DS, the staff, they were the top of the game. These are the people you looked up to. And finally, you were going to be going into their back garden, their environment, and doing some soldiering with them. And I remember thinking all that sort of stuff as we were flying across the treetops in Brunei. Finally, we came down. You know what it's like on the LZ. Massive whirling blades and dust and grit and all sorts of stuff going all over the place. And finally, when the chopper lifts off, you're there. And I remember we were on there sort of like they'd improvised a helipad and they'd knocked down, you know, trees and they'd built this and built that. And you're on the helipad or on the LZ as it is, as the chopper lifts off. And when it's gone and the sound drops, all you can hear is this mass jungle noise. For the first time, I'd ever heard it. You know, all the crickets and the insects and the screaming and the howling of the odd monkey here and there. All these sounds hit you straight away. And it was just bizarre. You're like, wow, this is incredible. But before you've even really got time to take all that in, your Bergen was on your back and you were being told by your DS, you've got to make it up to your harbour area. Now, the harbour area proper wasn't anywhere near the LZ. I can tell you that now, right? We had to basically pick up all our gear. And now we were going up a hill that was worse than anything we'd seen in Wales on selection. Worse than anything. The hills in this jungle were absolutely torrid. They were disgusting. They were high. They were steep. And moreover, the weather, it was just so hot. and humid and sticky. You were sweating before you'd even got off the chopper. And now this heat had hit you proper. And you were walking into the canopy of the jungle with all your gear on, a massive amount of gear. And you're walking into the jungle proper to get into your harbour area. And when we got to the harbour area, you were given your location and you started to set up. You built your A-frames where you were going to sleep, which is like a basher arrangement, like a hammock type thing with a canopy over the top of it. And you started to build your little area, okay? And that took some time and it was nice to do that. And the DS would come around and explain to you how things were going to be and what your arcs of fire were. And once you're in the jungle proper, everything is done tactically, okay? There's no, all right, we'll have 10 minutes off for this, we'll have 10 minutes off for that, we'll go non-tact, we'll get a pizza, all that sort of stuff. Everything is done tactically. So you go everywhere in pairs, you take your weapon everywhere. The whole thing is done as if at any time you could be attacked and you have to disappear, okay? And to that end, you had drills, you know, you knew where your ER, your emergency rendezvous was. And if you got told to go to the emergency rendezvous, you had to go. So the ERV was ever present. So you're in your harbour area. And I remember the first night of selection, the first night in the jungle proper, you go to sleep because you sleep under the canopy. Once it gets dark, you can't go anywhere, you can't see anywhere. And I remember the first night there thinking, wow, I wonder what this is all going to be about. I was in my dry kit, in my basher, sleeping. And I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. The next morning we got up, and the first period of selection for about 3 weeks is all lessons. But it's all done tactically. There's a big schoolhouse in there that they've built out of logs and an old canopy and all that sort of stuff. And every morning you wake up, you stand to, okay? So you stand to by your basher, the DS come round, they check everybody's all right. Once you stood to, you get your kit together and you disappear up to the schoolhouse and you start having the many, many lessons. A lot of the lessons are basic soldier. And I've always been told to be a special forces soldier. It's just basic soldiering done extremely well. Okay, so there's no swinging off ropes, dangling in the water and fighting underneath the waves. Okay, it's just basic soldiering done well. And to that end, you cover a lot of the lessons you've covered before as a normal soldier. But the foundations of a soldier are laid in those basic lessons. And if you can't get them right, there's no point. You even cover things like marksmanship, the marksmanship principles, and things like that, just to make sure that everybody's got themselves completely wired tight. So those first 3 weeks are extremely intense because not only are the lessons, it's like a monkey see, monkey do. Monkey sees, monkey does. They show you, they demonstrate it, okay? And then you go and do it too. So everything they do, you do. You did navigation exercises where we walked for 2 or 3 days on end sometimes into the jungle, practicing all our drills, laying up at night and all that sort of stuff. We practiced ambushes. We practiced contact drills. You name it, all the skills required to become a special forces soldier or a basic special forces operator, because like I say, you never stop learning in the regiment, were being instilled into in this first 3 weeks. Okay. And that was your time to practice everything. That was the time to get everything right. So you would go, on extremely, some of the exercises would go on for a couple of days. Some would last for half an hour, but you would cover everything you needed to cover to become a special forces operator. Okay. At the end of that 3 weeks, then it's then time to be tested. It's then time to run like a 3 or 4 week exercise where all the skills you've learned are put into practice. Okay. And you disappear out onto the area. Okay. Now Brunei is a huge area. It's got massively, dense jungle. So you disappear out into the jungle. And just like the old days in Borneo and Malaya and places like that, where the regiment operated and conducted some superb operations in the jungle, you were now doing this sort of thing on an exercise. And it was absolutely superb. But like I say, what you got to remember is the whole time you are in the jungle, you can be sacked at absolutely any time. They can get rid of you for anything at any time, okay? It could be, you haven't done something properly, you've skived off, you've smoked when you shouldn't have smoked. You've got to accept that when you go into the jungle, okay, you're being watched 24/7. And you might not see them watching you, okay, but they are watching you. They are there somewhere. Somebody's having a look at you all the time. So you can't afford to skive off. And it goes back to the ethos where I spoke about that last time I was on this show. The ethos, number 2. Highest standards of self-discipline, okay? You need the highest standards of self-discipline in the jungle. There's no point a soldier being in the jungle who's going to do his own thing. Because in theory, when you're not being watched by the DS and it's not a pass or fail on a course, Yeah, you probably could have a sly cigarette. Yeah, you probably could have hot food when you shouldn't be having hot food. But worse than the DS, when you do it for real, it's the enemy that are coming after you. So that cigarette or that smell of hot food is the thing that compromises your whole patrol and gets you whacked. Okay, so that's why they make it so intense in the jungle. That's why you're under scrutiny the whole time. And that's why you feel as if there is an enemy presence. It's not enemy, it's the DS. And, you know, the prize is not winning the operation or whatever it may be. The prize is that sand berry at the end of it. The prize is getting into that unit. You know, one of the, well, I consider it the best unit in the world, the SAS. Sure, a few of you over there would disagree with me or have your arguments with me, but for me, the SAS is the toughest regiment in the world. And the prize at the end, well, not at the end of the jungle even, but the prize at the end of the selection is that berry, okay, is wearing that winged dagger on your head. And you've got to accept at any time that can be taken away from you in the jungle, okay? And failure is probably feared by most people, you know, more than anything else. You know, failure is a feared thing, all right? So, like I say, the constraints that you operate under on selection are extremely real because there is this fear all the time that you could be slung off and sent home, do you know what I mean? And you don't want that. And obviously, all the time this is going on, some guys have decided for themselves, this ain't for me. Plenty of guys turned around and just left the course, okay? And by the time we were coming near to the final exercises in the trees, I don't know how many blokes we had left. We must have been down to 20, 25, if that. So the numbers have depleted completely from when we started off, you know, after the trees or, you know, after the hills even, you know, from the 300 that started selection, you're now probably down to about 20 or 25, okay? So the numbers that the trees claims is phenomenal. Okay, and rightly so, because it is a tough place. And like I say, selection is designed to find out who is going to be capable of operating within this tier, these tier one units of the SBS and the SAS. Okay, so it's an extremely tough test for a reason. So I'm straying away from the trees at the moment and just explaining to you about selection. But listen, those final days of the exercise, I can tell you, because you don't know either when it's going to finish. They don't give you a date. They don't go, we'll be going home on the 22nd. They just tell you you're on selection, okay? So you don't know what day the exercise is going to finish proper. You get the old jungle drums. You get the old rumours. You might have had an inkling how long selection goes on for, but you don't know exactly when it's going to finish. Like I remember, you know, we attacked a jungle base camp on one of the final attacks that we did, and then we were switched to another camp, okay, which we didn't know was there. And then we're thinking, are they going to walk us a bit further? Are we going to go? Yeah, you just don't know. And the point being there, and it goes back to what Sterling said again, and I keep referring back to the ethos, but it's true, an unrelenting pursuit of excellence, okay? And that's with any attack. Don't just think because you've taken one position, that's it, done. It's over for the day. Because there might be positions in depth. You might have more enemy to go on after. And so this thing is sort of like, right, I'm done now. I've done, I've achieved. That's not the thing you want to be looking for in a person. You want to be looking for the guy that wants the next challenge, that wants to keep going, that wants the next thing to come and hit him. And true to selection, that's exactly how they run it. That's exactly what they do. They keep you going all the time. And like I say, by the time we'd finished, we'd probably had about three or four false what we thought were going to be the end. We've had about three or four times it hadn't been the end, and we carried on. And you've just got to get your head around that and not focus on what you think is the end, but focus on what you think is coming next or what you want to come next. Might not happen. So, yeah, by the time they actually did say it was right, this is the end of the exercise, I actually didn't believe them. I'm like, no, that's not going to be the end of the exercise. But sure enough, it was. And I remember we did like a reorganization on the last position that we took. And we sat down and the DS came around and said, look, you know, it's over. You know, that's the end of the trees phase. And then we all pulled into the middle. We weren't too far from a helipad. Obviously, you know, most of the kit from the jungle camp had already gone. That had been collapsed. We were now operating in the middle of nowhere. So we were ready to go. We packed our kit and patrol at a time, or what was left of your patrols. Most of the patrols had sort of like had two from this patrol, one from that patrol. You know, we'd all been amalgamated by this stage of the campaign because of the amount of numbers that were leaving. Patrol at a time, we disappeared back up to the helipad, and the same helicopters that took us into the trees took us back out again. And I remember I was probably about the fourth or fifth patrol to go, waiting to go. And I heard the bird come in, and it came bum, 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 bum. And it landed in the thingy, all the dust and confusion again. We got on this thing, and as it lifted up, the loadmaster kicked me in the back of the, in the lower of my back as I sat on the skids. and passed me a can of beer to pass to the next man down. And we all sat there with a can of beer on this helicopter, flying out of the trees, job done. You know what I mean? And now, but you don't know if you've passed or failed. So it's job done. You can't do anymore. There's no more you're going to do to prove yourself in the trees because you're not in there anymore. It's all done. So now you've just got to accept the decision of the DS. And you don't know what that's going to be. And I remember you go back to camp and you have a wash and a shave because obviously you haven't had a proper decent wash and a shave all the time you're in there. And all the time you're thinking, are they going to call me? Are they going to get me? Are they going to say I failed? Are they going to say I passed? And they don't tell you. They don't tell you. We had a night where we had quite a few beers on the first night we came out. So everybody's drinking. And they're probably, in truth, you know, they're looking at you down to see who thinks it's over. To see who thinks they can have that many beers and be stupid and all that sort of thing. So you're not out of the woods. You're not out. You're not there yet. So I remember we had that night on the piss and it was quite a strange night because there's still some guys knocking about the camp who have failed, who are going back, who are not going to join the regiment. So you've got to sort of like get your head around that a little bit. And then we woke up the next morning and I woke up and I remember they were sending the company clerk round to go and get people that had failed. So he'd come round, he'd knock the guy on the top of the head who was in his bed, right, DS, want to see you. They'd go on down there and they'd been told they failed and they'd come back and they'd go, I failed. And he'd look at me and go, oh, jeez. And as the company clerk's walking into the room, he's the most feared man in the world because you know if he gets you, you've failed the course. So this is after you've completed this period of time in the jungle, which has been probably the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. You're now waiting for the company clerk to come around and give you a tap on the shoulder. And if he does, the likelihood is you've failed. So that morning was particularly hideous. And I remember it got to about midday. He was still going because each guy just doesn't get told they failed. They'll probably have an interview and told why as well. So the process took quite a bit of time. But by midday, the clerk had stopped coming round. And the ones who'd passed were sat on our scratches thinking, yeah, we might have done, we might not have done. Eventually, the clerk comes round for the final time and says, that's it, you know, the rest of you, you're going back to Hereford. Because don't forget, you haven't passed selection at this stage. You've just had, you know, a period in your life which has probably been the hardest you've ever had. You still haven't passed at this stage. But you have passed what I term as the probably the hardest part of selection, which is the trees. Okay, so now, certainly in the eyes of the DS, I think they gave you a bit more respect at this stage of the campaign, you know, and if I'd have been a DS myself, you know, looking at soldiers that had come through this part of selection, they'd be getting a bit more respect from myself as in terms of, you know, you're closer to the door than what you were. So that said, that was the trees. You know, we spent a couple of more days kicking around while we waited for the flights. In that time, we cleaned our weapons, we got everything shipshape, and then we flew back to Hereford. Do you know what? I can't even remember where we flew into. But we get back, and like I say, it's straight back up to Hereford, onto the camp, and then you're going on to the next phase, which I'll cover at some stage in the future. But like I say, the jungle was the hardest thing I'd ever done, but probably at this stage, one of the best things I've ever done. And don't forget this. If you find something you enjoy doing, it's not work, okay? It's not work, it's enjoyment. It was a pleasure to be there. And people do often ask me about selection and say, you know, how hard was the trees? Well, the trees was extremely hard, but because I was enjoying it, it overweighed the extreme harshness of the course, okay, and made it bearable. So there you go, that was the trees. Okay, I'll continue. I've done you in a little bit there because I've gone so long into this show with the trees, although I think it was worth it. We haven't got a lot of time for anti-piracy. What I will say is my time on anti-piracy was a great time. I spent about 5 years in the Gulf of Aden and around those areas, transiting up and down, protecting ships from the pirates from Somalia. I haven't really got time to go into it. That's going to have to be my next show is going to be on anti-piracy because I have probably got at least half an hour's worth of material that I can talk to you about with anti-piracy. You know, how it came about, where they came from, what they were doing in the first place. Because don't forget, you don't just become a pirate overnight, okay? These people, in some respects, were forced into piracy by the stuff that was going on around them. I'll cover more of that. You know, how did they operate? What was their modus operandi? And it changed as well. So they started off, you know, in these small skiffs, but they progressed and they grew. And as we started going down there and putting up these countermeasures, they started getting bigger. And so the tactics changed. So we'll talk about that with the anti-piracy because that's very important you understand that. And then, like I say, I'll give you a few of the stories where I actually came face to face with pirates. So that'll be interesting. We'll do that next time I'm on the show. As always, be sure to check out newsrep.com for the latest foreign policy, security and defence news, and also crateclub.com for spec ops grade gear hand-picked by professionals. See you all again soon. Big Phil signing off. Who dares wins?
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Soft Rep Radio.